Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan, South Sudan, and the rest of Africa this Tuesday, December 31st, 2024. South Sudan prepares to tackle cholera outbreak.
We were able to vaccinate about 170,000 people in Reng, so that vaccination was completed, and another 30,000 people in Juba at the IDP camp. We have also another additional dose of 80,000 doses of the oral cholera vaccine now available on ground.
And some South Sudanese women say enough is enough.
My message to the men is that allow your women to compete in the job market. Give them that freedom to do whatever thing they want. And my message also to the women is that even if you are educated, you should be submissive to your husband.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Thirteen 13,000 cases of cholera have been recorded by South Sudan's Ministry of Health as the country tackles an outbreak that has claimed a known number of fatalities. Health officials in Unity State say thousands of families affected by floods will benefit from the vaccines. For VOA News, Sheila Pony reports from Juba.
Cholera is spread through water and food contaminated with cholera bacteria. Vaccines can help prevent the disease, which can cause life-threatening watery diarrhea and vomiting. South Sudan's government has received 1.1 million doses of the oral cholera vaccine, the only one approved for use. The consignment is part of a larger vaccination effort spearheaded by the Ministry of Health and its partners, the United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, and the World Health Organization. Bang Makon Chan is the acting director general of the Unity State Ministry of Health. He says the state is the hardest hit in South Sudan.
The current situation, we are still in a bad position because we still have cases coming from outside, especially areas under submerge, those who are in highlands, and it's very difficult for us to reach them due to the lack of speedboats and canoes. That we don't have them. It's very difficult to assess those people.
Chang told VOA the state registered 101 deaths at Bentiu State Hospital. Dr. Harriet Pasquale, undersecretary in the National Ministry of Health, says her office plans to work with health workers in areas hit hard by the outbreak.
We were able to vaccinate about 170,000 people in Reng, so that vaccination was completed, and another 30,000 people in Juba at the IDP camp. We have also another additional dose of 80,000 doses of the oral cholera vaccine now available on ground in Malakal to vaccinate the people of Malakal. And hopefully the vaccination should start latest by the 1st of January. We received another 1.1 million doses of vaccine, which was meant for Juba, PG, and Awil West. But based on the current situation we are having in the country, Bentiu, that is Robkona, needs to be prioritized because of the current situation.
Chang says logistical challenges have prevented health workers from providing services in many areas of Unity State. Gabriel Boomteop, UNICEF's immunization officer in South Sudan, says international organizations play a key role in the fight against cholera.
This vaccine is not a replacement, but an addition to existing strategies, such as improving water, sanitation, and hygiene. Our goal is to vaccinate 80% coverage of the population in hotspots like Juba and Bentiu. By achieving herd immunity, we can protect even those who aren't vaccinated.
Chang says each dose of the vaccine is a step closer to defeating cholera across South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Sheila Pony.
Some women in the Jonglei State Capital Bor are challenging traditional cultural norms to pursue employment. Activists say societal expectations persist that keep women from seeking jobs, with some men insisting that their place is in the kitchen. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
Jessica Ajok, the head of Bor-based childcare and women's rights organization, is defying the odds to pursue a career. Ajok says earlier enforced marriages, along with limited access to education, prevented her and other women from achieving their goals in life.
So I encourage every community and I encourage every family to maybe send a girl to school so that they can be able in competing with men, so that we can all build the nation together.
Salome Athieng Bol, another Bor resident, says men and women should be given equal opportunities in the job market. She says some cultural norms have crippled women's ability to take part in nation building.
First of all, my message to the men is that allow your women to compete in the job market, give them that freedom to do whatever thing they want. And my message also to the women is that even if you are educated, you should be submissive to your husband. Education cannot bring you ahead of the husband, because the husband will always remain the head of the family and you will always be under him. So even if you are educated, you need to be submissive to your husband and know that you have to do your roles as the woman of the house.
Bol Deng Bol, the chairperson of the Jonglei Civil Society Network, says societal expectations have been harmful to women who have been the breadwinners for a long time.
It is a common phenomenon in Jonglei State, Lagos State, among other states in South Sudan, that women and girls are often left behind in terms of education, in terms of public participation, in terms of leadership, and all this, irrespective of the fact that the system of governance or the legal framework, for instance, the constitution, the transitional constitution of South Sudan talks about affirmative action. Literacy, the rate of literacy in the country is pretty much low. And so there's need for, upping the initiatives, to educate our people about the laws that are existing, the families, the chiefs, the traditional leaders, and other systemic institutions that are there, give equal rights to their children, boys and girls, and all of that, in terms of education and opportunities that life, provides.
Elizabeth Ayen Queer, the executive director of the non-profit Women Empowerment Program South Sudan, says our organization is working to help women and girls in the state gain financial independence and overcome the obstacles that have long held them back.
Women Empowerment Program, South Sudan, empower women in different ways. It empower women through leadership trainings and also empower women through economic empowerment programs like tailoring trainings, crocheting, bead making, bread baking, and cake baking. It's also empower young women leaders. And by doing this, they target young girls in schools. Management form about 6 school girl right clubs in Bor County, where they discuss their issues.
Some men in the state say traditional gender roles are better. Bor resident Daniel Nyak Ngang says women can become rebellious when they are independent.
Many women, when they are given a chance to get employed in some companies or NGOs, when they have become financially independent, they tend to be obeying their managers, their institutional managers, rather than their husband. If the woman has become financially independent and she cannot listen, she cannot cooperate, then that means the man has become almost useless in the societal belief.
Another resident, Daniel Kwang Ayuen, adds that the high cost of marriage in Bor also influences men's attitudes toward women. He says marriage is expensive and he thinks that allowing women to become financially independent is not a good choice.
If we allow our wives to pursue careers that is dangerous to marriages, yes, she will be earning money, which is good, but also she will be more likely to be badly influenced by the rampant moral decay. Also, some women become arrogant and start acting like men in the houses, which is one of the things a man dislikes. So for me, I'm not allowing my wife to pursue career.
Human rights organizations argue, though, that the patriarchal culture in South Sudan creates barriers for women, systematically marginalizing them from leadership roles and equal opportunities in the job market. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng in Bor.
We're bringing women's voices to the conversation on things that matter to hearts and minds of women.
We are here at Kalerwe Market, Uganda, Kampala, where in this whole market, women are crying out for their situations to change.
With strong opinions and expertise on things that impact and change their lives.
Here in Kinshasa, campaigns to raise awareness against the spread of coronavirus are common, but getting that information to people who have no access to water, electricity, or money can be a challenge.
From right here in the nation's capital to on the ground from all over the African continent.
I think a big thing for me is just being able to say that when these protests are happening, does it turn around into policy?
We hear your voices. Women's voices, our voices, and add your voice to the conversation each week right here on The Voice of America. Check your local TV listings.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America. The Democratic Republic of Congo has accused Apple, one of the world's biggest technology firms, of using so-called conflict minerals in its products. Apple denies the allegations and has stopped buying minerals made in DRC. Darren Taylor reports from Johannesburg.
Some of the minerals used in cell phones and computers, including cobalt, tin and tungsten, are mined in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, where dozens of rebel groups are fighting for control of the region's rich resources. Peter Major, based in Johannesburg, is an international mining consultant familiar with the DRC.
He has syndicates and warlords and militias controlling the minerals. The DRC is a very large country. It's two-thirds the size of Europe. And you got 75 million people there, but not a very strong centralized government. The centralized government cannot control its provinces, and a lot of those provinces are infiltrated with militia groups. They say there's 120 militia groups in just the small eastern provinces of the DRC.
In mid-December, the DRC government filed criminal complaints in France and Belgium against Apple, accusing it of using minerals extracted by rebel groups. Human rights groups say the rebels often enslave people, including children, to work in mines. Major told VOA the militias smuggle their illegal or conflict minerals to neighboring countries, especially Rwanda. From there, he explains, the minerals are exported legally and enter the supply chains of big electronic and tech companies.
I can understand the centralized government. They say Apple and a lot of these tech companies are using minerals mined and sold by the renegades, by the militias. And if we can cut off their source of money, then we cut off their source of arms, and maybe the government can get them under control. I don't think that's going to be possible. You need the whole world to step in. Apple's done an amazing job of trying to track where its minerals come from. But you can have so many middlemen. Look at the U.S. trying to sanction Russia. There's so many middlemen dealing in Russia's materials that it's almost impossible to stop the flow.
The United States and other governments have imposed sanctions on Russian mineral and oil exports since it invaded Ukraine in 2022, but Russian exports have continued. Mining industry experts say organized crime groups launder conflict minerals by mixing them with legally sourced minerals. The DRC government's chief legal representative, Robert Amsterdam, told reporters after the case was filed that Apple uses deceptive commercial practices to assure consumers that its supply chains are clean.
The activity that Apple engages in is what we allege funds the rebels inside the Congo. the allegation that Apple is in any way unaware would have to mean that a $1 trillion company hasn't bothered to read any UN reports that have come out in the last decade and a half. The defense of ignorance does not work in this situation. And the government of the Congo, having not been contacted by Apple after we sent letters setting out in detail our complaints, felt that there was absolutely no other choice but to open up a large number of legal actions.
Apple says it has found no reasonable basis to conclude that its minerals directly or indirectly financed or benefited armed groups in the DRC. The corporation has since notified its suppliers to suspend sourcing minerals from the DRC and Rwanda. Apple said it did this because it's concerned that given rising conflict in DRC, it's no longer possible for it to perform the due diligence required to meet what it terms its high standards. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, post-election tension grips Chad. Find out why after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
What skill would you most like to master?
I would love to learn how to use my hands. That is craft work, making the baskets and doing more of the clay artwork.
So I think I will go technology any day, anytime. So mastering what I do already, which is practically technology, which is software development, applications development, analysis and data mining.
I would love to play the organ. I love it. I love the sound. I would want to have it at home to play to my family.
Now many people don't like to be teachers. So for me, I'm willing to be.
I appreciate people that I can sing because I can't sing myself and I don't have a very good voice. So I will go for singing.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. An ease calm hangs over Chad, where the opposition is calling for an immediate end to the country's transitional government and the cancellation of the December 29 general elections, which the opposition says were highly boycotted. Chad's elections management body has pledged to count the votes and declare the results, saying irregularities cannot influence the outcome. Moki Edwin Kinzika reports from neighboring Cameroon.
L'Agence Nationale de Gestion des Élections.
This is the voice of Assane Bayra, Vice President of Chad's National Agency for the Management of Elections, or ANJ. She tells reporters in Chad's capital, N'Djamena, that vote counting is underway after the Central African State's local, provincial and parliamentary elections on Sunday. The elections were scheduled to end Chad's 3-year transition period following the death of longtime President Idriss Déby Itno in April 2021. The late president's son, Mohamed Idriss Déby, was declared the winner of the presidential election in May. Provisional results for these latest polls are expected by January 15, Ange says. Assane said, ANJ has successfully executed its mission of ending the transitional period by organizing free, fair and transparent elections. The elections body says about 36% of Chad's estimated 8.3 million registered voters took part in Sunday's polls. But opposition parties maintain that turnout was much lower, saying that civilians respected opposition calls for a massive boycott. Avoksuma Jonah is a spokesperson for Chad's Political Actors Consultation Group, or GCAP, a coalition of several dozen political parties. He spoke on Monday during a press conference in the capital.
Le peuple tchadien, ne sachant pas
avec exactitude.
Avoxuma said more than 90% of about 8.3 million registered voters adhered to GCAP boycott calls because civilians learned from Chad's May 6 presidential elections that Deby wants to confiscate power and extend his late father's long rule. He says Chadians are angry because Deby is a dictator who silences all critical voices. In a statement Monday, Success Masra, president of the Transformers, one of Chad's leading opposition political parties, called for a new transition, which he said should be marked by truth, dialogue and reconciliation to lay the foundation of a stable and inclusive political system. Masra, who served as prime minister under transitional president Deby, says ongoing tensions in the Central African state may degenerate into violence and social strife. Avoxuma said he is very certain that despite the massive boycott, Ange will still proclaim Deby's ruling Patriotic Salvation Movement as the winners of the December 29 elections. Ahead of the vote, opposition parties accused Deby of rigging the elections, a charge Deby denies. Yemenge Batinbaye is a political analyst at the University of N'Djamena. He spoke to VOA on Monday via a messaging group. The analyst told VOA that although the opposition has legitimate claims that the boycott was massive and irregularities, including the stuffing of ballot boxes to rig elections for Deby Meni, it is unlikely that the polls will be annulled as the opposition requests. The Chadian government says calls for the elections to be annulled and for a new transition are intended to cause chaos and sink Chad into violence. The government says civilians should not obey opposition calls to destabilize their country by going out onto the streets to protest. Moki Edwin Kinzeka, VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
And that's the end of our show for this. Kenyans have gone to the streets to complain about the country's political scene, forcing government to drop proposed new taxes and fire several ministers. The youth movement highlighted the challenges Kenya faces as the government tries to increase revenue from citizens who are grappling with high cost of living and are angry about corruption and what they see as attempts to silence dissent. Muhammad Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
As the year comes to an end, President William Ruto's government and a large section of Kenyan youth are still at odds over the direction the country is taking. The discontent erupted in June as Parliament considered a bill that would increase taxes on certain food items and other sectors in the economy to help repay foreign loans and fund development programs. Lawmakers passed the bill, leading protesters storming the Parliament buildings and burning a section of it. Ruto, seeing the public anger, declined to sign the bill into law. Nairobi has also witnessed protests against alleged police brutality. Rights groups say Kenyan security forces killed at least 65 people during protests or while in detention during 2024. On Monday, hundreds of protesters took to the streets of Nairobi to demand the release of Kenyans allegedly abducted from their homes and other places. According to human rights groups, at least 10 young critics of the government were kidnapped by unknown men in the last few weeks. The police have denied their officers were behind the abductions. Speaking in Homa Bay County on Friday, President Ruto said his government will end the mistreatment of youth. He called on parents to discipline their children.
Hawa watoto ni baraka kwetu tumepatiwa na Mwenyezi Mungu.
These children are blessings that are given to us. Every parent should take care of their children. Let's work for our children. We, the government, will do our part and we will end the abductions so that the Kenyan youth can live in peace, Ruto said. Boniface Mwangi is a Kenyan activist. He says Kenyan youths are united against the political elite who have made life difficult for them.
The Gen Z movement, actually, they came together, they were united, and they had one goal to reject the finance bill, which they succeeded. And then they went a step further to demand for political reforms and change of the cabinet. And somewhat it happened, and that forced the political elite to come together. So for the first time, you have Uhuru Kenyatta, Raila Odinga, and Ruto in the same camp.
Since the protest, President Ruto has formed what he called a broad-based government. He appointed some politicians allied with former President Uhuru Kenyatta and his 2022 election main challenger, Raila Odinga, to the office.
Tulianza tukiwa pande tofauti tofauti. Saa hizi tunafunga mwaka.
We started as divided people and are closing the year with a broad-based government. We have brought many Kenyans together, Ruto says. Political observers say this move is designed to better manage the opposition to his administration. Martin Andati, a political analyst, says such political maneuvers will do little to ease the public's anger toward the Ruto administration.
The guys in power are behaving like nothing happened. But the truth is the dynamics completely shifted. But you know, the old class, political class, inclusive of President William Ruto, Raila Odinga, the likes of Kalonzo, they are still stuck in a time warp. They are still thinking along tribal chieftains and political kingpins. Then they are going back to 2007, when these youth are in 2027 already.
Political observers predict a tough political fight ahead, as the Kenyan government and political parties have to constitute a new electoral commission. The current one technically exists, but all the commissioners' terms have expired. Some are concerned that youthful activists will start petitions to recall members of parliament, a move that, if successful, may lead to the fall of the government and an early election before 2027. Mohammed Yusuf, VOA News, Nairobi.
And that's all we prepared for you this Tuesday, December 31st, 2024, the last day of the year. We thank you for being our avid listener. Happy New Year, and we now leave you with Colonel Mido and the song Nani Ongere. And to the Monyomiji in Eastern Equatorial State Capital Torit, I will say VOA Ongere.
Monyomiji ngayara egonanie. Monyomiji ngayara egonanie. Anevuni aurwe. Anevuni.
We've been listening to Mido and the song Nani Ongere, and we dedicate this song to our listeners in Eastern Equatorial State Capital Torit. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Mokbel Yabaru, and engineer, Joe Jill, we wish you a happy new year. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America.
Wa ikijubwa okoribong.